Welcome to the Superman Fan Podcast, episode number 37. Happy birthday, Jonathan Kent. My name is Billy Hogan, and I want to welcome you today. Once again, checking out the important dates in Superman history, in comics and other media, the website supermanhomepage.com listed the traditional accepted birthday of Jonathan Kent on September 1, which also happens to be Labor Day, which kind of makes sense since Jonathan Kent was a farmer and in the Silver Age also a storekeeper. And so I thought we would explore the life of Jonathan Kent and how he has his depiction has changed over the years in Superman comics. Titling, a lot of these episodes, Happy Birthday, whoever, might be a little old, and certainly I don't want this to be the Superman birthday podcast, but at least during this first year, as I explore some of the different characters of Superman, I thought it would be a good idea to kind of on the weeks of certain characters or certain actors' birthdays to kind of highlight them. We've already looked at one episode of Jonathan Kent's life during the Father's Day episode at Superman. I forget the exact issue number, but where Jonathan Kent happens to visit his grown son, Clark Kent, in Metropolis, even though, he is supposed to have been dead for many years. And if you would like to, if you haven't already, listen to that episode. That's episode number 19, titled Happy Father's Day, Jonathan Kent. And as I mentioned in that episode, the kind of the antagonist in the story is kind of a weak character and kind of pulls the quality of the story down. But if you kind of read through that section of the story and just concentrate on Jonathan Kent's interaction with Clark and Lana and Lois Lane, that part is a very enjoyable story. After this brief pause, we'll take a look at the life of Jonathan Kent. As I just mentioned, the traditional birthday for Jonathan Kent is September 1st. I'm not sure who came up with a lot of these birthdays, decided which character had which birthday. Some of the characters, we might find some research online or some publication, how it came about, but I haven't been able to find it yet. Of course, Jonathan Kent is the adopted father of the of Kal-El from Krypton. Of course, he was named Clark Kent and is also, at least in the Silver Age, was Superboy and, of course, Superman. Now, Clark got his first name from his mother's maiden name. Martha was originally Martha Clark. Now, in the one-page origin of Action Comics number 1, of which I have a reprint, Certainly don't have an original copy. If I did, that would have been sold, and certainly we'd be a lot wealthier than what we are. But anyway, in a tiny panel in that brief one-page origin, a passing motorist finds the rocket that the sleeping baby is in. However, no name is given. Now, in Superman number 1, kind of retells the origin, and I have a oversized reprint, which was done in the 70s. DC did a series of famous first editions, and one of them was of Superman number 1. And in the origin from Superman number 1, the Kents are named as finding the rocket with the infant Kal-El in it. However, only the wife is identified, and her name is given as Mary Kent. George Lothar, a sometime comic book writer of the 1940s, in his 1942 prose novel, The Adventures of Superman, gave Clark's adoptive parents' names as Eben and Sarah Kent. And those names were also used in the first episode of the 1950s TV series Adventures of Superman. In 1948, in Superman number 53, in the story titled The Origin of Superman, drawn by Wayne Boring, the Kents' names are given as John and Mary Kent. However, their names are not identified until near the end of the story, when the adult Clark is paying his respects at their graves. And we see their names, John Kent and Mary Kent, on their respective tombstones. Now, Pa Kent's name is first given as Jonathan in Adventure Comics number 149, and in the story titled The Fake Superboy. Now, in the 1960s, with the development of the multiverse at DC Comics, with all of the 1940s era heroes put on the Earth, alternate Earth 2, with a alternate version of Superman and Batman, the Earth 2 Kent's names were given as John and Mary Kent. The adoptive parents of the Kal-El, whose name was spelled K-A-L-L, whereas the Earth 1 Kal-El, his name is spelled K-A-L-E-L. Now, in Superboy number 196, the July 1973 issue, Jonathan Kent is portrayed as having been a race car driver as a young man. In all of the issues that delves into Superman's origin, at least the stories that spend some time on his adoptive parents, Pa Kent is given as portrayed as being a farmer. Now, in the Silver Age, by the time Clark reaches the school age, the Kents have sold their farm, moved into the town of Smallville, where they operate a general store. And in the Superboy number 78, in the story titled The Origin of Superboy's Super Costume, which was the second story of that issue, and a series of flashbacks were given the origin of, you know, how Superboy's costume and the Superman's costume was created. And on the seventh page of that story is given the detail when about the Kents selling their farm and moving to Smallville. In the classic Silver Age, Golden and Silver Age Superman, Ma and Pa Kent die shortly after Clark's high school graduation. Of course, Ma Kent passes away first, and then Pa Kent, on his deathbed, admonishes Clark to use his powers for the benefit of mankind. And of course, in the many Superboy stories of the Silver Age, there are a lot of stories where both Ma and Pa Kent help train their superpowered son in the uses of his abilities. They help him develop his secret identity, and of course cover for him when he has to switch from Clark to Superboy because of some emergency. Now, post-crisis, after the famous 1986 miniseries Crisis of Infinite Earths, the comic book artist John Byrne, in the miniseries Man of Steel, revises Superman's origin. Jonathan and Martha Kent find Kal-El's rocket at a much younger age than any Golden and Silver Age stories. And in that first issue, it is mentioned that Jonathan is a fan of science fiction stories, which would seem very ironic, if, you know, with the Kents finding an infinite, an advanced rocket. Now, John Byrne totally sidesteps the whole orphanage angle of previous Superman origins by having the Smallville area hit by the blizzard of a century, in which soon after the Kents find the rocket and take young Kal-El, or the baby young Clark, which they name him, and the rocket back to their farm. Their farm and the whole small general area around Smallville is hit by the blizzard of the century, so that the Kents are isolated for about 5 months, so that after the spring thaw and they can get back into town, it's naturally assumed that Martha will happen to conceive and give birth at home. And in the miniseries World of Smallville, which after the Man of Steel miniseries came out in the first year or so after the reboot of the Superman continuity, World of Smallville, along with the first miniseries World of Krypton, and then the latter World of Metropolis, kind of gave the post-crisis version of Krypton, delving into the history of Krypton, you know, in the centuries before that world's destruction. And of course, Metropolis features the back history of Perry White, Lois Lane, Jimmy Olsen, and the young Clark Kent. But in the World of Smallville, delves into the history of Jonathan and Martha Kent before they were married. Now, Jonathan Kent is a returning veteran from a war. Now, first, it's not specified which war, but in a later in the issue, in one panel, we see Jonathan Kent kind of flashing back to a memory of himself as a possible prisoner of war of what looks like to be Japanese soldiers. Upon his return to Smallville, the young woman he used to date, Martha Clark, had married Dan Fordman, the youngest son of the wealthy family who owned Fordman's department store in Smallville. The reason She had married Dan Fordman as I guess Jonathan was declared missing in action, and everyone feared that Jonathan had died in battle and his body just had not been found. But his aunt had happened to write his aunt Sal, who lived with her brother, Jonathan's father, happened to write the recovering Jonathan a letter detailing all of this as he recovered in a military hospital. Now, in a, I guess, a nod to the Silver Age Superman stories where the Kents owned the general store. In this story, Martha Clark's family owned a general store. However, the elder Fordman, I guess, was putting a lot of pressure on Martha Clark's father, trying to take over the business. However, his son Dan Fordman saved the general store from his own father's plans, and upon his father's death, Dan married Martha Clark, and Dan took over the family business in running Fordman's department store. However, after Jonathan's return, Dan Fordman, within the year after Jonathan's return, eventually dies of lung cancer, and in his will, in disposing of his property and assets, leaves Martha, doesn't, well, he doesn't leave her any money, but he leaves to her 10 acres of land simply because she once said she liked it. And a year after Dan Fordman's death, Jonathan and Martha are married. But sadly, they suffer three miscarriages before they find baby Kal-El's rocket. In this post-crisis continuity, the Kents remain farmers. Jonathan Kent does suffer a heart attack after the Death of Superman story. He suffers cardiac arrest and dies at the hospital. And in the afterlife, happens to meet his son Clark and encourages him to come back, and then Jonathan is resuscitated at the hospital and recovers. In the 2003 miniseries Superman Birthright, the writer Mark Waid revises Clark's origin again. Jonathan and Martha, in the art of the story, they kind of resemble Annette O'Toole and John Schneider from the Smallville TV series. And in this story, Jonathan has more of a conflict with his son Clark, expanding on a scene from the miniseries Man of Steel number 1, when Jonathan is kind of slightly displeased about Clark using his developing abilities to make himself the star of the football team, and then after that game, tells Clark the truth of his origin and how they found him, and maybe why his powers developed. And in Superman Birthright, as well as one of the reasons Jonathan has a more strange relationship with Clark is that he feels left behind as Clark explores his Kryptonian heritage. And since the recent Infinite Crisis, Jonathan Kent has even been portrayed as younger than he had aged since the post-crisis revamp of the mid-80s. Especially with Action Comics issue number 850, which adds a few details about Clark growing up. And in the last part of this episode, I thought I'd look at the story that details how did the Golden and Silver Age Ma and Pa Kent pass away. Well, that story can be found in Superman issue number 161, the May 1963 issue, which was published on March 21st, 1963. Now, if you would like to read that story yourself and enjoy it for yourself before you listen to the remainder of this episode, if you're unable to find a back issue or a copy of the original issue in the back issue bin of your local comic book store or on eBay, you can find it in the reprint publication, as I did, in the trade paperback Superman in the 60s, which I did not check online, but I would think that would still be in print. The story, The Last Days of Ma and Pa Kent, the story was written by Leo Dorfman, and the artist given in the DCIndexes.com website, both penciler and inker, is given as Al Plastino, and in the website comics.org, it credits Al Plastino as the penciler and has a question mark by his name as inker. So they're not as sure. Now, in this story at the beginning, Clark is, it's a certain anniversary, and so apparently a sad anniversary. So, as Superman, he flies to Smallville and visits his foster parents' graves and flashes back in his memory to a time when, shortly after his high school graduation, Superboy builds a pleasure cruiser for Ma and Pa Kent to travel by sea to the Caribbean for a vacation. He doesn't buy a ticket for a cruise for them, but builds a ship for them to sail to the Caribbean themselves. But then again, this is the Silver Age, the early 1960s, so some details like that, were not followed as logically as they might be today. They're on the beach of a Caribbean island, and Jonathan is digging for seashells for his collection when he unearths a pirate treasure chest. However, there's no gold or valuable treasure. There's only flintlock pistols, a cutlass, and a parchment signed by Peglig Morgan, dated July 16th of 1717. And on this note, Peglig Morgan writes that he had been driven off ship by the cruelest pilot of all and marooned because, however, the lower right part of that page has been torn off. Superboy joins them and, at his mother's suggestion, flies them through the time barrier with their ship back to the time, back to 1717, so they can explore this pirate, find out about this pirate who had been marooned on this island. However, as Superboy is picking fruit for his parents, he is found by the pirates that had marooned Peglig Morgan. And at the pirate's orders, Superboy digs his own grave on the beach, and they put him in there and up to his neck so that he will drown when the tide comes in. Of course, as Superboy, still dressed in his Superboy costume, he's playing along, and when he's buried in his water, flies away and then uses his super breath to blow the pirate ship away. As Ma and Pa Kent hidden from the pirates, eat the fruit that their son found for them. After their return to the present, Mon Pa Kent become very ill, and Clark calls for the doctor. When the doctor and his assistant arrive and examine the Kents, their diagnosis is fever plague, and the symptoms appear after eating a particular Caribbean fruit. However, there have been no known cases in 100 years, and there is no cure. However, young Clark is in no danger because it doesn't affect youngsters, as the doctors put it, but the house would need to be quarantined. So as Superboy, he builds a crystal dome to isolate the house, and of course Lana, also immune to the effects of the plague because of her age, sits with the Kents while Clark, as he tells Lana, tries to find some specialist. Well, he researches in a library with his X-ray vision, and in a particular book finds a cure for Caribbean fever plague in drinking the sap from a Brazilian orchid tree. And as Superboy, he finds, flies to Brazil, finds some, and comes back, and as Clark, gives the remedy to both of his parents, to no avail. And then the young Lex Luthor, escorted by a prison guard, lends his scientific genius to finding a cure for the Kents, but he also fails. Then Clark gets the idea of sending his parents to the Phantom Zone until he can find a cure for them. However, the Phantom Zone projector malfunctions, and Clark discovers that it is the interference of solar flares that stop him from being able to send them into the Phantom Zone. Then at the end of the story, Ma Kent dies, and then Pa Kent briefly awakens to deliver his famous admonition to Clark. And after their funeral, Clark removes the crystal dome and Superboy, and uses his heat vision to sterilize the home so that the plague germs do not pose any danger for the citizens of Smallville. In his grief, Clark blames himself for causing their deaths, since he took them through time to the past, and retires from Superboy. And he decides to sell his home because there are too many bad memories there, especially since, you know, he still blames himself for their death. While packing away the family papers and records and mementos, he finds the pirate's diary page and brings the paper to a museum, which happens to have a display case with Peg Leg Morgan's diary. And in that diary, somehow, is the missing bottom right corner of Clark's page, where when the completed page is read, Peg Leg Morton's writes that the reason he was marooned was because he was suffering from the fever plague. And then Clark realizes that Ma and Pa Kent probably contracted the disease when they opened the treasure chest, not when he took them into the past. And when checking with the museum curator, the curator searches the museum records and informs Clark that the sea captain who donated the diary and the man who put the diary in the sealed case both died of a strange fever. And Clark uses his supervision to see the virus germs on the diary and sterilizes the diary with heat vision, without destroying it, of course. And since he is relieved to find that he is not responsible for causing their death, he resumes his career as Superboy and flies to space to create a memorial statues of Ma and Pa Kent on an asteroid next to another asteroid, in which he has created a memorial to Lord. And so the story ends as it began, with Clark paying respects at the gravesite of his foster parents, Ma and Pa Kent. And that will wrap it up for another episode of Superman Fan Podcast. You can find Superman Fan Podcast at supermanfanpodcast.mypodcast.com. Send emails to supermanfanpodcast@gmail.com. And expanded show notes can be found at supermanfanpodcast.blogspot.com. I also have a spoiler-free comic book review blog called My Pull List, which can be found at mypulllist.blogspot.com, where I review the comic books I read every week. This week, for Thursday, September 4th, will be a week where I'll have to wait until next week to visit the comic book store, so I will be posting a blog about the recent comments from a Warner Brothers Studios executive talking about rebooting Superman and making their movies as a darker tone as far as story and character, as far as is compatible with their particular characters, and my thoughts about the idea of a darker Superman movie and the idea of kind of rebooting the Superman movie franchise, much as Batman Begins rebooted the Batman movie franchise. And I'll post that on sometime on Thursday, September 4th of 2008. And once again, next week I'll be doing an episode on Superman's cousin, Kara Zor-El Supergirl, followed by episodes on Christopher Reeve, the actor on the 1970s and 80s Superman movies, and then the final week of September, the week of my birthday, on the main Superman villain, Lex Luthor. I want to thank all of you for listening to Superman Fan Podcast. And as always, thanks to Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.